case 1978, and we're making this tape in Long Beach, California. And I hope it's working. What do you remember about your grandparents? Or do you know where they were from? Or?
Well, my grandparents were from the East. My grandfather was from Illinois, and my grandmother was from Virginia. Now, those are both oil states, but they didn't have anything to do with it. One was carpenter and the other was a housewife. And she just raised the children and like that, you know. But that was on one side of the family. My father's side of the family were railroaders. So my father, he entered in the railroad. And my brother also ventured into the railroad. But me being moving out into the western part of the United States, why, I done several other type jobs, and I finally became an oil worker. I went into the oil field when I was 16 years old, and I probably worked around 40 years in the oil industry. And all my parents before that, I didn't know anything about oil. My brother or father, either one didn't know anything about it. So other than that, I'm the only person that actually worked with the tools and in the industry of producing and discovering oil. So I started when I was about 17 years old. And that was in about 1924. And I started over in Torrance, California during an oil boom that had a discovery they found over there. And in the meantime, there had been several strikes that were looking for oil all over Southern California. And when one field would be out of work, or another one would open up, and I just transferred from one field to the other. But I never had what you would call a steady job, other than maybe the length of one or two wells that was to be drilled. Maybe with a bigger company I might stay longer. I'd take a general petroleum about 4 years one time, steady. And there were several jobs where I've had in 5 or 6 years. Most of them, though, were only a matter of months. And then they would transfer you someplace else, and if you didn't care to go because of living conditions, why, you just wouldn't go. You'd find yourself a job someplace else. But the general trend of people working in the oil field, there were, you might call them boomers, because they would work where the work was, and if there wasn't any work, they'd go hunt for work, and they'd go where there was work, where oil operations being done. So, other than that, I couldn't pay that. I really had a steady job in the production and drilling until I went to work for a company out here in Long Beach, and that was in latter years. And I worked 25 years. I retired from the LBOD, which is the Long Beach Oil Development Company, which is a conglomerate of companies that have put the finances and their know-how together and formed a LBOD company. And so I had worked for them for the 25 years. But there were a lot of other companies, individual companies that worked in the same field, like Shell and Union, Texaco and Standard, and all of the major companies had holdings and they drilled wells. I worked for one company for about a year and a half in the Long Beach field before I worked at the other place, the Superior Oil Company, which was known in earlier years as Killer Test Petroleum. And it was a kind of a rough situation for the men. They didn't care whether you lived or not. As long as you got the work done, they didn't care what chances it takes to live. And if you live through without getting your fingers or arms or toes or something cut off, you were very fortunate. So I've gone through the mill. I mean, I've worked at all of the various type jobs on a rig, from top to bottom as far as the working man is concerned. I never was an executive or anything. The highest pay that I ever got in all fields was for the actual work with the tools on drilling rigs and production rigs, from well puller, driller, whatever category that they wanted me to work in, that I could fulfill a job, that's what I done. And at all, the wages and the very types of work weren't that much different. You might make only $1 or $2 a day more, you know, it was all about the same wage check. But each man had a different position on a drilling rig, had 5 or 6 men on it. They had their certain jobs that they did, like firing the boilers and working on the derrick, floor and helping the derrick, drilling and everything like that. Now, I don't know just exactly how to explain some of the things. It's all new to me, and I went through it, and I learned a lot during the years I was in there. I could explain any questions you might have. I will if I can. I'm not positive that I know all of your questions.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up, I was born in Kansas City, Missouri. My dad, he was a railroader, and he boomed around like oil workers do, and they worked railroad get jobs, and 5 years or 6 years in a place is fairly a long job for that. The railroaders, they would go all over the country, but I went with him because, too small, but finally he came to California in 1921, and my mother and the rest of the children stayed we were out in Arizona. And we had moved from Illinois to Arizona. And we were out there, and the oil fields was going good, and the railroads weren't too busy. So my dad, he went out into California, in fact, Long Beach. And he never did work in the oil fields other than labor or something like that. He never worked in the drilling under or anything like that. But he did work for a transportation company, hauling and stuff like that. But then, as the years went by, I became a little bit older, and I ventured out into the field when I was like, of course, I worked various other jobs, whatever a young fellow could do. But I finally went to work in the oil field, and the pay seemed like a real good for a young man, because they wanted to pay me $6.50 a day, and my dad could only get $6 a day, and he was an experienced finisher, So I went into the oil field, and I started, I might say, at the bottom, and done all the jobs and worked through as much as I could, and during my life, I guess I got about 40 years of work in the field, off and on. Maybe 1 year, 2 years, 6 months, 5 months, or 5 years. It's like I say, one company I worked, company I retired from, which was production maintenance and drilling. And I worked 25 years for them, and I retired about 7 years ago. But other than that, I worked, I imagine I worked for 100 different companies. I don't know. I couldn't even tell you. I worked for every major company, or they were on the board, and a lot of minor companies that a lot of people that I know that I'm not even hear of, So I just turned out to be supposedly an oil worker, so I don't know why I did, because I figured that was the least line of resistance, so I said that I certainly didn't get an education, which I should have. But anyway, I enjoyed my work and good fellowship, and there's a lot of nice people with a lot of bad ones, and they all weighed out about even, I guess, in time, and we had a lot of fun.
Did you go to school at all?
Yes, I went to school from kindergarten to the eighth grade in Phoenix, Arizona, and that's when my folks moved out to California, and my dad in 1921, and my mother followed about a year later in 1922. And I graduated out of the eighth grade in Arizona. At that time, the years for going to school was only 16 years old or the eighth grade. So me being a dummy, I went to the eighth grade and got out of school when I was 16 years old. You can tell how smart I was. And I came to California, and they finally caught up with me in California not going to school because the law then required you to have to be 16 years, to be 18 years old, or to finish high school. And I knew it was smart enough to get that high. So, but anyway, I did go to high school a short period of time, and then I became, I guess I wasn't 18, I must have been 16. I don't remember. Do you know? Well, anyway, I didn't get an education. But I did go to high school, my first year of high school in Phoenix after I got out of the eighth grade. And due to the hardships on my parents and what have you, people in those days didn't have as much as they have now, and your clothing wasn't too good, and you had to go to school with children that were fairly well dressed, and I was ashamed of my clothes and everything, and I thought, well, that's just the wrong place for me to be, because everybody's got new shoes and new clothes, and I got nothing, you know. So I got away from it. But in the meantime, we came to California, and then they caught up with me until I was, I think it was 18 years old. Anyway, I went to school. They caught me on Friday. I went to school Friday, and the next Monday was my birthday. So I never went to school anymore. But they told my father that if I didn't go to school, that they would fine him $25 a day for every day that I wasn't present in school. And so he seen that I was there. He took me down there by my ear and made me get in the class. But then I didn't do much good. I went to work in the oil field. I was making more money than a lot of the carpenters and people like that because it was booming and there was a shortage of getting men or getting boys or anything else. So anyway, that's the way I broke into the oil field.
So did you go to school one day in Long
Beach? No. It was in Torrance, California. My folks were living in Torrance at the time. And he was working over there for the Southern California Gas Company. And he got me a job working with the gas company, and I didn't like that because it was digging ditches and hard work. So one day I got a chance to get a job on a drilling rig, so I took that. It was hard work, but still it was a dollar a day more than the adults were making, you know. And I figured, boy, that's real big. But I worked at a lot of jobs. I worked 40 years in the oil field. Well, I did, off and on. That was my mainstay of occupation. But I did drive a truck, and I did work in glass factory, and I worked in pile driving and various occupations like that. But I didn't work long periods of time because they were more or less boom jobs, too. If they wanted to build a bridge, they built it. When they got through, they had to wait to get another bridge to build, you know. So I... Well, it just wasn't steady work, you know. It's just regular, like all construction work. When there's work, you work, and if there isn't any, well, you wait till there are jobs. Sure. But I worked most of my life at anything that I could do until I got in the oil field, and then I stayed with that. Because you could always leave one job. But they always promised you that when we get this well drilled and bring it in, we got two more to drill. And when they got through with the one, well, they'd say, roll up your clothes, boy, that's all it is. And away you go, so you'd have to go another job, you know. So it turned out that way, but I couldn't complain about it because I was working steadier than a lot of people. Outside of a period of time in Long Beach during the Depression, and usually there's a couple of 300 wells being drilled in the state of California, more or less, one way or another. And if I remember right, at that time, the oil fields had shut down so low that there was about three strings of tools, that means three drilling derricks, working in the state. And I was working on one of them, making $1 a day for 8 hours. And I probably wouldn't have done that. I'd have been a big, strong boy, and they wanted somebody that had more brawn and brains. But anyway, I worked at that and a couple other fellows that I knew, and we were very fortunate to get $7 a week. And there were some of the times that they were so bad that you just couldn't get a job for months. And I had gotten married in the meantime, and my wife and I lived out in Artesia, and we lived good on $8 a week. And I worked for the Union Oil Company, sometimes one day, sometimes 2 days a week, and we only got $5.50 a day. So if I worked 2 days a week, well, that paid the groceries and everything. My wife and I talked about that 1,000 times, getting by on $8 a week, and now you can't get by on $8 a day for just groceries alone. But anyway, we lived through it. I guess that there are a lot of people that had sadder stories than I had, because I was young and strong, and I didn't like work too much, but if I had to do it, I did it. Other than that, why, we survived.
I guess I'm still not clear on why, in the first job you got in the oil field, you could get more money than your father made as a teamster or whatever.
Well, the reason for that was that a lot of people wouldn't work in the oil fields because it was like the coal miners say, it's so treacherous and dangerous that people didn't want to work there. You're working with big, heavy equipment and stuff breaking, and there's a lot of people getting hurt at various times, or killed, feet cut off, and arms, fingers cut off, and dropping pipe on their feet, and cutting their fingers off in the cat heads, burning them, and just various things that were dangerous. A lot of people just didn't even get them to work on one of them because they were scared of it. But mostly the reason was that if you took an oil boom and they started up 25 rigs, well, each rig had to have at least 15 men working on it. There'd be 5 men on each shift. So if you had 30, 40 rigs on them, there's a lot of people. And in those days in California, there's a lot of people come to California that were from Texas, Oklahoma, Illinois, Louisiana, various places where they have oil fields, and they were experienced men, Virginia and different places like that. They would come out here because they'd all go here and they'd get a job right away quick, they'd go to work. And there was a lot of work, so they couldn't get the people to work on cheaper wages because of the danger and the hard work and everything, so they paid a little bit more money to attract them to that work. Now, there was a lot of other jobs out here, but a lot of them, they weren't paying the wages. They all paid there. And when I was 17 years old, making $6 and a half a day, gee, that was a lot of money compared to a grown man who worked all his life and railroads and places like that. If he got a job in the railroad, he wouldn't be getting over $4 a day, you know. So that day, oil fields paid it because they were making the money. They were wallowing in dough, and they wanted to get rid of some of it, I guess. And I think that is about the only reason I'd say I went in the oil field. Actually, I'll tell you a little story. I got laid off from a job, and I hadn't worked for a couple of weeks, and another friend of mine and I, we decided to join the Navy. And I was only 17 years old then, and you couldn't go in the Navy then until you were 18 without your parents' consent. And so times were kind of rough, the boom would get down in the oil field, so we started down to San Pedro, we were going to join the Navy, and we kept hiking down there, and we stopped at a national supply store that we had worked at before in the pipe yard, taking care of pipe and rolling it for pipelines and casing and stuff like that. And the man there that we worked for had laid us off, we could feel free to that, and so we just in there to see him and talking to him. And so the man came in and he said, you don't know where I'd get some good stuff men to go to work, do you? And this fellow, his name was McClellan, he said, there's a couple of them right there. So he said, is either one of you boys ever work around the oil field? And both of them said, yeah, we had been on the job, but we had never been around the oil field. So he took us out to the job, and we went to work, and it paid $6.50 a day, and we just forgot about the Navy. Man, that was a lot of money. That Navy wasn't paying the $21 a month. So we hired out with them, and then when they got all the rig all rigged up, that means prepared to go, why, the driller told the tool pusher, the driller told the tool pusher, he said, those fellows don't have any experience. He said, they're not roughnecks. That's what they call the men that work on the rigs, roughnecks. He said, they don't know anything about it. So he came up to me and he said, Sonny, I like you told me that you worked around an oil rig. I said, I did. He said, what'd you do? I said, I cut weeds around them with the flat. He laughed, and he went to the drill, and he said, make a roughneck out of it, boy. So I stayed there, and both of us did. He stayed there. We worked, and didn't take it too long run. What we had to know was just the manipulation of the tools and things on the rig, you know, after you learn that, well, it's the same, repeated over and over and over. So That's where we started roughnecking. That's why I happened to be in Torrance. That's when that boom was on in 1924. So that's when I first started being all over.
So you said it takes 15 men to drill
a crew
to drill a well.
Now they have a driller who's the boss on the 5-man crew. Then you have a derrick man that works in the loft up in the top of the derrick that unlatches from the pipe, and the elevator keeps pulling it out, and they bring it up there and unlatch it and stack it back in a stack on hand. 96 feet joint, three joints fused together, 96 feet long. One man works up there, then there's a man on the floor, there's a cathead man. He's the one that breaks the pulls on the wrenches with a rope wrapped around a cathead to break the joints so they can unscrew them, and also make them up, to tighten them up. When they're going in the hole, they tighten them up, coming out, they break them out and set them back. And the lathe-on man, he's the man that runs the tool that backs up the tool that is breaking the other tool. In other words, it's a backup. They call him backup man, but anyway, that's the five. A cathead man, a derrick man, a driller, a pipe racker, and a lathe-on man. That's 5 men. And then they also have a man that runs around and takes care of the rig. He's a tool pusher or the drilling system down. Well, those 5 men work one shift. And then that's the day shift from 8 o'clock in the morning to 4 in the evening. At 4 o'clock they change shifts as 5 more men come on. And the same way at 12 o'clock at night till 8 o'clock in the morning. So the 3 shifts have 15 men. If they have a boiler, firemen, they have 18 men working on the rig. So, but a lot of places they make the man work in the rig and fire the boiler too, because they just have to run back and forth and adjust the water and the fire and that. And a lot of these boilers have automatic regulators on. In those days, they didn't have, but you could run out there and set your fire and turn a little more water on, you know, a little more fire, and do pretty good. But later years, when they had higher tension steam and everything. A long time ago, they had small boilers, 50 horsepower boilers, and it'd take about three or four of them to pull a rig. And later on, then they got 160, 170 horse boilers, and they had automatic fire control on them, or water and gas. And used to fire with oil, it was hard to do because they had to itemize it. Had atomizers on there to blow the fuel, the oil in there, and had to know how to operate that and everything. And the new ones, it was all automatic. The guy didn't have to go out the boiler and measure 50 times a day, so they didn't need them for the boiler. But other than that, it was about 15 men for a full crew for a 24-hour round-the-clock deal.
And did they usually work around the clock?
Oh, yeah. Every day, Saturday and Sunday, and 24 hours a day. The rig run continuously. They never shut down until they finished the pool. And they done that because there's certain things that you have to do. If you had to pull all that pipe out of the hole at the end of the shift, and you had a deep hole, it might take you 4 hours to pull that pipe out of the hole and maybe 2 hours to draw it in. Well, 6 hours of your day was gone and you only had 2 hours to do any drilling in. So those who do that, well, they just kept it in the hole as long as they could, kept drilling with it, and if they had to start it out of the hole, when the next shift came on, if they had to start it out of the hole, they would pull it out, run back in, the next shift, you know, and they'd drill for maybe 10, 12 hours, or maybe 5 or 6 hours, or maybe 2 hours, just according to where the bit got going. But all that stuff had to work in, but they found out that they had to have the people there 24 hours a day because it was just too expensive to run it the other way. They just couldn't cut the hole to prepare them for the work of the tools. And those rigs, they ran them, and some of those rigs cost $175, $200 a day just for the run of the tools, and so they had to keep the tools working so that it would pay off, you know. And,
did they have to pay people more to work at night than on the day shift?
No, they paid the same. They didn't have any difference in pay. They got the same pay. The only difference in pay was that, the driller, he got the most money. He usually got about $2-3 a day more than the other guy, maybe $4. And the next man, the derrick man, or the cathead man, or whoever they assigned to the job for. Some companies figured the cathead man was number two man, and some companies figured the derrick man was number two man. And the cathead man, he had to take care of all the machinery and see that it was in working shape and everything like that. And the other man, he had to take care of the derrick man, had to take care of all the pumps and hydraulic equipment, see if the pumps were maintained and kept in shape so that they could use them at all times, that they wouldn't be broke down. Because it's a hydraulic work system. They circulate that hole down through the drill pipe and up around the outside of it. And it brings all the cuttings and stuff out of the hole. And they've got to have pumps do that at all times, so the pumps have to be kept in shape. And when they're cutting holes, the bits grind that formation up into small particles, and they use a rotary mud. They call it a rotary mud. It's actually made up of out of a lot of the formation that comes out of the hole, but then they sometimes have to put mud with it. And they put ingredients in it for lubrication, like aqua gel and various things. And then if they're drilling in a real high-tension field where there's a lot of gas and there's a chance of the gas that will come in the way of the fluid in the hole and blowing it out, they have a blowout, and then they have a mess. They might have a fire, they might blow out, they'll blow the hole in the ground, the rig falls in, and every other thing. They've all done that in time. But they try to keep the mud circulating in the hole at an even keel. They try to keep it, they weigh it, and they test the viscosity of it for lubrication. and they try to keep the mud around, oh, maybe 73, 75 pounds. And that's a weight that they carry for the, I really don't know what that's, I think it's 75 pounds for a gallon. I'm pretty sure that's the way they measure it. But anyway, it's got to be real heavy, because at any time that they weigh it up through it, it's placing the cutting that was in the hole before they were removed. And the weight of that fluid is holding down, and if they hit any gas or anything, and they didn't have enough weight on it to hold that gas down, that gas would start out of the hole and blow that mud and everything out. That's why they have that. So they carry that mud heavy enough to where they know that if they hit anything like that, while they're in safe position, they're not going to have it fire and stuff like that. But anyway, the system is a hydraulic system. They've got to keep the mud circulating, and they settle it out into a ditch. They also have a couple machines they call shakers, and that shakes the rough material out of the mud, strains it out, the stream, and then it goes out to the suction tip, back through the pump, and back down through the hole, and it circulates. That's complete circulation. They just keep cleaning the mud up, and if they lose too much of the lubrication, why they add something, aquagel or something, that will bring it back to. In other words, they kind of break down the friction. You take a drill pipe in the ground that's dragging on the walls of a hole, creates a terrific amount of friction. And lubrication eliminates that, makes your drilling a lot easier, and also keeps you from getting your pipe stuck. And it builds the wall of the hole up so it won't fluff in. If you didn't have anything but hole in there and no mud, the hole would cave in. Stick your drill pipe in the hole, you know. And they've got to keep that circulation up. Although there are times that they will get fissures in a hole, and they lose circulation. The circulation won't come up to the surface, and then they're in a spot. So then they've got to figure out why, where, and when, what's going up, and where it's going from. So then they will pump ground, pulverized redwood in the hole, or cotton seed, or just anything, get down in there and plug up that hole. Because the hole may not be very, it may be just a fissure, it may be. Maybe it would take 250,000 or a million barrels of fluid to fill the hole up before it would ever fill up to where it started returning again. So they try to plug that hole up so that they won't lose all that mud. And then that mud, they may be going into an area where then it would get returned. They don't know, so they plug it up. Well, that's one of the trouble they have. There have been places where they never did get circulation again. And you can't drill an oil well without a hydraulic system, without circulation. If you dig something out of the hole, you gotta get it out of there so that you can get more out, you know. It's gotta come out of there. You're not making any holes if it don't, you know. So there's a lot of things like that happen and cost companies. A lot of times they have broke rich companies. And when they talk about drilling a hole in the ground, people think, oh, well, they just put some tools in the ground and drill a hole. But I worked on different holes that cost over $1 million. In fact, I worked on one that cost $2 million to drill it, and they never got a speck of oil. So that's why they wonder why oil companies want to make a lot of money off their oil, well, they drop a lot of money. But, again, they drilled a well on Signal Hill in 1921, June something, 1921. I wasn't here then. That was when I was figuring on coming over there. But it was all in the papers that they'd stuck oil on Signal Hill and everything. So that's when my dad made a move from Arizona over here. They The well went on production June 12, 1921, and it's still a pumping the whole pump. And a well used to be a commercial well that produced 19 barrels of oil. But a well that you just spend $1 million on, if you couldn't produce it for 19 barrels, it would take you 100,000 years to pay for it, you know. So if you ordinary coal don't cost too much money, and they figured 19 barrels, now whatever the price of oil is, sometimes $50 a barrel or $5, I think it's 5 cents a barrel, isn't it? That oil has to represent money that they put in that hole, and it's got to pay off within a certain period of time, or it's not commercial, it's just dead deep, yeah. But most oil wells that produce any amount of oil, like these wells in Long Beach down here, when they got the drilling down to where they could drill them in 30 days and 15 days and like that, and then when they come in 7,000-8,000-10,000 barrels. Well, those wells would pay for themselves tenfold in 30 days. So that's what they're looking for. They want that easy money. There isn't anybody. If it didn't cost anything to drill it, there'd be a lot more wildcatting, which wildcatting is a method they call wildcatting. It's looking for oil where they don't know where it is, and oil is where you find it. So they can do a lot of things to locate various things that might indicate that there's oil down there, but they don't actually mean there is. They have a system, a system seismograph, and they will drill a hole in the ground about 90 feet deep, and they'll put a gauge of dynamite down in there, fill a hole up with mud and put it down in there with dynamite and blow it up. And they have sensing devices stuck out, hooked up the wires all over the country around there, and they blow that. Then those indicators indicate whether there's a soft dome in the ground. Those shocks will go down, they have a soft dome, and they'll kind of cushion. With hard weather, they'll reflect off much faster than they would. So that's some kind of a dome. And they know that oil is usually in a dome, especially gas. Gas, it generates enough power to lift the sand and everything up and build a big dome under the earth for it. The gas is usually on top of the oil, unless the oil has been depleted through some other something or another. Maybe it drained off someplace and burned up in a volcano or something. You know, you never know. But anyway, when they find those domes, they call them gas domes. Then they drill down and see if there's any gas. If they hit gas, they test it and see how much it is. And then, for curiosity's sake, they'll see how thick it is. And this is all being done with core barrels. Eventually, if there's any oil down there, they'll pick the sand up and they bring it out. It's saturated with oil, and they know, well, boy, we got it. Let's get after it, you know. So then they go in there and run a test on it, see if it's worth anything or not. And if it is, well, they bring the oil in. Now, the test is a tool that they run into the hole on drill pipe, and the drill pipe is completely dry all the way down to where the test is. When they get the tester down to where they get this oil found, they rotate that tester, and the tester has grips on the outside of it that grips into the wall. They rotate the drill pipe, and that opens some ports up in this tester. And if there's anything in the formation, it'll come into that and come up the drill pipe. Well, as soon as they do that, the top of the drill pipe is open. And they open that tester open. Right away, quick, you get a bow. Put it up 6,000 feet up the top of the hole. It's blowing, so they know there's something coming in. It's either gas or fluid or something. So they leave that bow long enough they know how long to leave it because of the size of the drill pipe they use and everything. and they leave it blow for maybe a minute or two, and then they rotate the pipe and then push close again, and then they pull the tester out of the hole. Well, if they pull the tester out of the hole, they're breaking this drill pipe off and 96 joints on top and setting it back like the same way when they're drilling. Pretty soon they'll either come to rotary mud, some kind of fluid, gas oil or something. When they break it open, why, maybe the first two or three of them, maybe sometimes it'll start blowing out of the hole. It blows stuff all up, blow everything out of that drill pipe. But usually if it don't, if it does, they close it off and close it down until they kind of halfway control it, and then they keep doing that, and pretty soon they break the joint open and oil will come out. Well, they figure out how many joints of oil was in the drill pipe, how long it took for it to get in there, and they will calculate to calculation, measurement of fluid, how much the drill pipe holds and how much is in there. Well, they figure if it made 300 feet in 3 minutes or 1 minute or whatever it is, they calculate how much pressure it took to put it in there. Of course, they have the pressure on the top of the pipe. When it starts blowing, they close that and the pressure goes on there, and it might show whatever the pressure is, 100 pounds or 1,000 pounds or 3,000 pounds. But anyway, they calculate what it is, and then they get out of the hole and they find that oil and know, well, we've run into the top of it. So then they will go in there and they'll start coring that. They put a core barrel on the drill pipe and they go in there and they core that formation. Well, every time they pull a core out, why, if it's oil sand, the more deeper it is, the greater the basin is in capacity, you know. So they'll take what they think is a good amount of oil, a good amount of sand, and then they'll put it on test, try to pour it. Well, suppose if they make 50 barrels, it may make 50,000 barrels, just according to how much oil is down there and how much tension is down there, if it's there. So that's about the limit of that, and then they turn it into tanks and get ready for shipment to refineries and places like that, you know. But in between that period and the period of shipping that oil, there's a given thing they gotta do. I can talk for 3 weeks to tell you. But anyway, I'll make it short. They've got to run casing in the hole. That is a wall in the hole to make it sustain all pressures of whatever's in there. And that casing is put in the ground and it's cemented in there. They pump cement down through it and up around the outside, and they calculate how much it takes for that fluid to go up there to cement that pipe in the hole good, at least 100 or 150 feet from the shoe, which is the bottom of the pipe up. So there can't be any penetration of any other domestic water, salt water, or anything that might be in the ground to go in there and mix with the oil. Or the oil go in domestic and ruin the drinking water with somebody, you know. So then after they do that, they drill that shoe out. Shoe is female. They drill that out down into the oil zone. Then they've got say about 100 feet in there. They'll take 50 to 75 feet of perforated pipe and put it on the end of their tubing, and they'll run that down in there and run it into that oil zone. They'll pack the tubing off the top, and then they'll open that up, turn the pumps on and pump water in there, and it pumps all that heavy mud out that's pulling the oil down. And as the mud gets lighter, the water only weighs 8 pounds, the mud weighs 76 pounds, when it gets, pretty soon it gets to light, that the water won't hold the weight of it down, so bingo, it'll start going the other way. And that oil will start pushing that water out through the tubing, through the perforation, and through the tubing, and out of the well. Now they got all the lines hooked up and everything, when it comes flat, it'll flow it into a pump until it cleans up. And then after that, why, it's an oil well. And if they ever want to go in and deepen it, or take in more sand, or put in more perforated pipe, or anything like that, well, they did. And this perforated pipe that they set in there is called a liner. And all it's for is to keep the sand from coming into the hole. It just a system. Several joints to pipe, they may use 100 feet or 300 feet or maybe 25 feet, but it's got perforations in them, it's got fine screen over it, so that the sand can't come in. The oil can, but the sand can't. And most always find oil in a sand formation, either sand, shale, or